This is an ABC podcast.
After the absolute fire hose of headlines out of America during the Trump years, 2021 has been eerily quiet by contrast. Not that Joe Biden's been having an easy time in the White House. In fact, his popularity over his first year in office has taken such a knock that many Democrats are bracing for the loss of their wafer-thin majority in the US House of Representatives during next year's midterms. So, how badly is Joe Biden tanking? And can he still recover? I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre.
And I'm Stephen Smiley. And today on The Signal, we're taking a long view of US politics and daring to ask what to expect from the 2024 presidential race.
Chaz, for the last time on The Signal, would you mind very much introducing yourself for us?
Hello, Sorry. I've got a voice break.
We're keeping that in.
Hello, I'm Chaz Licciardello from Planet America, and this is my real voice.
That's perfect. So obviously the first year of any presidency is significant, but this one is arguably more so than others. So just for one sec, leaving aside the kind of domestic legislative agenda of the Biden administration, what were the big plot points in 2021 for Joe Biden?
Well, I think Joe Biden in his election campaign guaranteed that the number one question was going to be about COVID. He promised to not shut down the economy, but to shut down the pandemic. He said that about 7,000 times during the election campaign.
I've said it before. I'm not going to shut down the economy. I'm not going to shut down the country, but I'm going to shut down the virus.
He did not shut down the pandemic. There's a lot of good reasons why he didn't. He's not the only one who didn't shut down the pandemic. The entire world didn't shut down the pandemic, but only he promised to shut down the pandemic. And so that's the first thing. The first thing is the arrival of the Delta variant, just when America thought they were about to see the back of the pandemic. And then as the Delta variant starts to disappear, now there's a new variant again. Those two moments, I feel, are the key moments of this year for Joe Biden, followed very closely by Afghanistan. Joe Biden, once again, he ran not as the perfect president, but he ran as a safe pair of hands. I'm going to be different to the insane vicissitudes that you saw under Donald Trump. You can forget about politics when I'm there. I'll just take care of business. I'll take care of the shop. He did not take care of the shop during the withdrawal of Afghanistan. In fact, it was a very Trump-esque withdrawal. If Trump was there, it might have been identical. And so I feel like he lost a lot of credibility.
To those asking for a third decade of war in Afghanistan, I ask, what is the vital national interest?
The collapse of the Afghan government just weeks after America withdrew its forces has put President Biden's policies under the spotlight.
The Taliban now has almost full control of the south, west, and north of Afghanistan.
Thirdly, in the wake of the Afghanistan withdrawal, the arrival of big-time inflation, which the Republicans had predicted all year while he was trying to get through his large spending bills. They said, watch out, there's going to be inflation. And then inflation happened. Now, there might not be a connection. In politics, that doesn't matter. When someone warns you that something's going to happen because of your policies and then that thing happens, you own it. I'd say those are the three major issues of Joe Biden's first year.
Inflation, now running at more than 6%, is the number one concern for most Americans as prices rise from the gas pumps to the grocery store shelves. It's also a looming threat to the Biden presidency.
I guess Afghanistan was something that the Biden administration steered, but definitely Delta and then Omicron variants and inflation, you could argue, were things that sort of happened to them. What do voters make of the way Biden has handled those three things on that list?
I think that voters aren't very sophisticated in terms of who to blame. I think they just blame the dude in charge, regardless of whether it's his fault or not. I agree with you that I don't think Biden could have done much more when it comes to the pandemic. Having said that, doesn't matter. The buck stops with the president. And I don't think the American public are giving him very high marks. It's very difficult to interpret polls because people when they're down about someone, they're down about everything. Your economic judgment, your handling of the pandemic, everything goes down at the same time when you're on the nose. So I wouldn't read them too closely, but it's pretty clear that the American public is very dissatisfied with Joe Biden at this point in time. And I would suggest those are the reasons why.
Even Democrats?
The Democrat polling is going down. He's dropped about probably 15% approval amongst Democrats.
A brand new CNN poll releasing right now shows a deepening Biden slump. A majority of Americans disapprove of his performance so far. Yes, the president still has strong approval among Democrats, but even among Democrats, members of his own party, those who believe he's focused on the right priorities, down from 90% in April to 75% now.
But where he's really lost them is Democrat-leaning independents. Democrat-leaning independents have gone from about 60 to 70% support down to something like 30% support.
Why are independents leaving Joe Biden?
And quite frankly, you cannot win an election when the independents that are leaning your way on net oppose you.
So if that's some of the stuff that's happened to the Biden presidency, maybe it's worth looking at what the Biden administration has set out to do itself in the way of reform. So in this, Biden has been trying to pass a couple of very big pieces of legislation, those large spending bills you mentioned just now. It's got a boring name. It's called the Infrastructure Bill, the first one, but it's actually massive.
Infrastructure Week.
Can you just set out for us, for anyone who hasn't been following, how big it is?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're talking about $500 billion extra spending on infrastructure. When I say infrastructure, what I'm referring to is roads and bridges to begin with, but also things like climate change research, solar panels, electric charging stations for electric vehicles, cleaning lead pipes. Like there's still lead pipes in the water supply in America, cleaning up general water pollution and land pollution areas, that kind of stuff.
A once-in-a-generation investment that's going to create millions of jobs, modernize our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our broadband, a whole range of things, to turn the climate crisis into an opportunity. And it puts us on a path to win the economic competition of the 21st century that we face with China and other large countries and the rest of the world.
$500 billion is a lot of money. I should say, though, it's spread over 10 years. And so it's unlikely to have an immediate impact either way. The other big spending bill they're trying to get through right now, the Build Back Better bill, has more immediate spending. What we're talking about there is childcare, like a universal pre-K and heavily subsidized childcare for the poor. We're talking about further subsidized health insurance. We're talking about lower prices for drugs, for prescription drugs, about extending the child tax credit, which they've just made greater during the pandemic. A few things like that. The problem with that one is while there's more immediate spending there, that so people notice it, it comes and it goes. Some of them start in 3 years' time and last for 2 years. Some of them start now, then disappear after 1 year. All of them are positioned in strange ways over the next 10-year period, where for just 2 years here or 3 years there, so that they spend as little money as possible so they can keep the bill down because they're trying to get past a moderate Senator Joe Manchin who doesn't want to spend more than $2 trillion.
Let's get our finances in order. That's all. You go out and buy everything you see and everything you want, even if you can't afford it. And you say, I'll worry about the debt later. I don't think so.
And so for that reason, they've taken every single budget trick imaginable, but that also limits the effectiveness of these programs.
Months of fierce disagreements among Democrats led to scaled back proposals, free community college, and expanding Medicare services out, while paid family leave is in, but time limited. Some progressive lawmakers are frustrated by moderate senators whose demands are shrinking the plan.
My actual feeling about this, if you're going to ask where this goes as far as the election goes, if this changes his popularity, is I actually don't think it's going to make much difference. Because I think the real life ramifications for most people won't be much. And I think at the moment, they're obsessed with inflation anyway. And they're kind of blaming these bills for inflation, which is just completely untrue, by the way. There's no economist who thinks that either of these bills would have a massive impact on inflation, maybe a tiny impact, and that would be next year anyway. The inflation that's occurring now is because of supply mismatches as a result of the pandemic, as much as anything else.
so your prediction is that even, you know, even when this does pass, it's not necessarily going to help Joe Biden a great deal in the polls, nor is the first bill doing that. And yet we did kind of hear these bills talked about, not as a guarantee for the success of the Biden presidency, but a kind of prerequisite. Is that an exaggeration or is that the case?
They're definitely talking about it as if he needed to do this to salvage something from the first 2 years of his presidency. I think that was not true. I mean, having said that, look, both these bills do, especially the infrastructure bill, does some good stuff. Okay, I'm not denying that, but it's just not going to win him votes. That's all I'm saying. And that's not me saying, by the way, that he should just give up, should just pack up and go back to Delaware. He can still make something of this, but it's going to be, as always with the presidency, dependent on factors he has no control over. Things like the pandemic, things like the economy, he can only control so much. And if the economy comes roaring back and the inflation goes away and the pandemic goes away, he might be on a winner in a year's time. It's got nothing to do with those bills though.
Now, Chaz, it's always fraught to predict the future, particularly when there's a new potentially highly transmissible variant of COVID rattling around. But from as far as we know right now, what do you think are the big challenges and obstacles on the road ahead for the Biden administration next year?
I think the biggest obstacles he's got ahead of him at the moment all involve the Supreme Court. I think that a lot of people are focusing on the abortion case that we've been talking about the last few days. That's not even near the headline of what he needs to worry about. In fact, that could potentially help him if the Supreme Court is particularly ham-fisted in the way they deal with this abortion issue. That could motivate Democrat voters. But his biggest problem is that the Supreme Court may be about to rule that his agencies can't do anything without legislation being passed by Congress. And the way it's worked in the past is, say, environmental legislation, very complicated. You'll pass a bill saying the Environmental Protection Agency can regulate to deal with carbon emissions, say. And then they go away, they get some scientists and they work out the best emissions, right? You don't want Congress to deal with that stuff because it's very complicated and it changes from year to year. And they're not experts on this. That's the way it's worked in the past. The Supreme Court might be about to say, no, you need Congress to do it. Anything that the EPA does is no longer valid. Now, if that's the case, if they say that, and there is certain expectations that they will, that will mean pretty much Biden can't do anything without a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, which he's never going to have, which means that will be the last time he does anything. It also means his entire attempt to deal with climate change will just be stillborn. In fact, it'll go backwards at a rate of knots. And this is not a great time for the world to go backwards at a rate of knots when it comes to climate change. So that is going to be, I think, the big story of the next 3 years, definitely, and possibly next one.
So that's where Chaz thinks the story is headed. But in the meantime, you can expect to hear a lot more about abortion access in the US as the Supreme Court considers whether or not to allow the Mississippi law that would effectively overturn the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade decision.
Well, the case is seen as one of the most aggressive challenges to date to Roe v. Wade, the landmark Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion in America. Here, the justices will decide the constitutionality of Mississippi's 2018 law banning most abortions beyond 15 weeks of pregnancy. If the court were to overturn Roe, abortion bans passed in a dozen states since the 1973 ruling would immediately go into effect.
It appeared pretty clear during the oral arguments made by the Supreme Court that there are five judges that are hot to trot to get rid of Roe versus Wade.
The Constitution's neither pro-life nor pro-choice on the question of abortion. And they would say, therefore, it should be left to the people, to the states, or to Congress.
And in particular, to approve this rule in Mississippi, this 15-week abortion limit.
If it really is an issue about choice, why is 15 weeks not enough time?
There are 21 states that the moment Roe versus Wade is overturned, immediately ban all abortion in America. There are 21 states, they've got laws on the books waiting to go for the trigger. As soon as the trigger comes, bang, they automatically ban abortion in those states. This might surprise you to hear, practically, that might not make much difference because the vast majority of those 21 states already make it damn near impossible to get an abortion. For instance, Mississippi, the state which this case is about, has one abortion clinic in the entire state. And that one abortion clinic is under all kinds of regulations and restrictions. If Roe versus Wade goes, there'll be a few months of activism and then people will just forget about it. Because I think that it's in a too hard basket for a lot of Americans. That's my gut feeling. But I just don't know. The Democrats are certainly going to try and make it an issue, at least in the midterms, and we'll see if they succeed.
Now, Chaz, we're thinking there about the midterms, which are next year. The presidential election isn't due till 2024. You mentioned Trump. We love talking about him. We'll get back to that. But let's think about Biden. So he's 79? Now, it'd be 82
yep.
by the time of the next presidential election. Do we think he's going to be running then?
I think that the only reason Biden ran in the first place in 2020, because I think he thought his shot was 2016, and I think he had decided he wasn't going to run again in 2016. But the only reason he ran in 2020 was because I think he genuinely thought that he was the only person who could beat Trump, and he wanted to make a thing of beating Trump.
I believe that the president is literally an existential threat to America.
Joe Biden is a dummy.
If we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
I suspect in 2024, it might be a similar situation. That, like, he's clearly too old. Everyone knows he's too old. But Kamala Harris, she's polling at 28%. And the Democrats have a real problem coming up if Joe Biden is not the figurehead, that Kamala Harris is not very popular.
There's such a sense of frantic panic of what's going on with her political prospects. You see a poll that came out last week that had Biden at his lowest numbers yet, but had Kamala Harris 10 points below that. She was at 28%. That means that there
but
is a real...
But no one is going to be able to out-primary her because she is a black woman. And the person who defeats a black woman in the Democrat primary, better be a black woman. Otherwise, black women are not going to turn out to vote because they're going to say, you've passed us over too many times. We're sick of being essentially your cannon fodder who we go out and we vote for you and then you ignore us and you take us for granted. Like, that's not going to work. And so it's either Kamala Harris or it's nobody, unless it's Joe Biden. If he can physically do it, and God, there's questions on that. But if he can physically do it, I think he's going to allow himself to be convinced to run again just because there is no alternative. And Trump is going to be, I don't want to skip here, but Trump is going to be the Republican nominee. So it'll be the same thing as 2020, him going, well, is anyone else going to beat Trump? No, I guess I'm up for one more ride then. That's my suspicion.
You're so right. That was going to be our next question. So if Donald Trump is definitely the candidate and Joe Biden is almost definitely the candidate, I mean, it's so hard to say this far out, but knowing what we know, who wins that fight?
It's hard to say. I can tell you now that it will be the most negative voting experience that America has had in modern history. I'll tell you that. In that the right detest Biden more than they've detested anyone for a very long period of time. And the left detest Trump more than they even detested Trump in 2020. So it's going to be like, I honestly think the only person that could get Trump elected is Biden. And the only person that could get Biden elected, re-elected, is Trump.
it's like Harry Potter and Voldemort.
It is like there's so much negativity over both of them. I know I expressed a lot of certainty about Trump and Biden just then, but obviously there is a physical factor here that both of them are old and feeble. And who knows?
Feeble is so damning. It doesn't get worse than feeble.
That's right. And Trump may be in jail in 3 years for all we know. There's plenty of court cases coming up. So there may be reasons why either one of them physically cannot do it. But I'll tell you now, if both of them can physically do it, they will do it. And it's going to be a horrible election. And I'm not looking forward to covering it, but I will. And I don't know what the result will be. It really is going to be, I'd say a 50-50, but it's more like a 30-30. And then 40% of people just snarl as they vote for whoever.
Just on your certainty about Trump, Chaz, I mean, is that because he remains deeply beloved by the Republican Party as well. Like, there hasn't been this soul searching that some were predicting, that Trump remains their guy, even though, you know, the handling of COVID, for example, was a bit of a shambles.
And under, the riots. And
yeah, and that too. He still remains, for, you know, the people that go to primaries in the Republican Party, the Messiah.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That is exactly what it is. I mean, I can talk about the incentives for Trump all I like, but the bottom line is someone needs to vote for him in the primaries. And the fact is that they love him.
As we gather tonight, millions of Americans are realizing that Joe Biden and the radical left have brought our nation to the brink of ruin. There's never been anything like what has happened.
He is almost as popular now than he was at his height as president amongst Republicans.
After just 9 months under Biden, violent criminals and bloodthirsty gangs are taking over our streets. Illegal aliens and deadly drug cartels are taking over our borders. Inflation is taking over our economy. China's taking over our jobs. The Taliban has taken over Afghanistan. Lunatic leftists are taking over our schools, and radical socialists are taking over our country. And we're not going to let that happen. We're not going to let that happen.
Almost, not quite. Like, he polls in the low 80s amongst Republicans, whereas he at his absolute peak, he was in the high 80s. So he's going to be the nominee if he wants to be.
That is The Signal for today. Our email, if you would like to get in touch with me or Ange, is thesignal@abc.net.au. And we will be back right here in your feed at the same time tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.